It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Since the start of the outbreak of bird flu among cattle herds in the U.S., more than 1,000 cases have been detected across 17 states. Wisconsin is not one of them so far.
But farmers around the country, including here in Wisconsin, are turning to internet-connected smart collars to monitor their herds for signs of this or other illness. Wisconsin-based company Bomatic is one of the primary manufacturers of the technology, which also comes in the form of ear or leg tags, kind of like cow Fitbits.
We're checking in with a Wisconsin dairy farm that uses smart collars and other automated technology like milking robots to find out how it all works and the benefits and challenges of running an automated farm.
Jessica Trimner is the herd manager at Milchum Farms in Athens. It's the largest automated dairy farm in Wisconsin, caring for more than 5,500 cows and heifers total. Jessica, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Happy to be here.
Let's start with these smart collars. When you put one of these on one of the cows in your herd, what kind of data is it giving back to you?
Excellent question. So by chance, do you have a Fitbit?
I have had. I've actually got a dumb bit now, just a non-smart pedometer. But I do know the concept, yes.
Right. So there are all different types and styles of collars and even pedometers. So this is very similar to that you have on your wrist right now. We're tracking activity, whether that's active steps or lying time. And then it's also tracking, which maybe for humans one day we'll get there, but eating time. So we're seeing how long is that cow standing up at the bunk eating, and then how many times or how often is she chewing that food? So a lot of really good information to allow us to know how healthy our cows are out in the herd.
Right. I imagine a lot of the things you just listed are potential red flags for some kind of illness or injury or something like that. How do you then take that data you're getting and say, hey, we need a closer look at cow number 137?
Yes, no. So it takes all of that data in, and then it will create a trend line based on that cow. And also it takes a trend line for animals that she's housed with. So that way we're not having false signals sent to us. And then after she deviates or changes the direction from her normal pattern, it sends an alarm straight to my phone that says, hey, we've dropped 2 hours worth of eating time. We've increased lying time. This is a cow we want to go look at. So it sends, whether that cow is in the parlor herd or in the robot herd, she is directed with a notification to the herdsman in order to identify if that cow needing to be seen.
Without these Fitbits for cows in effect, which is, you know, most of human cow history, how would you have watched for these kind of signals before? Obviously, you can't have eyes on every cow 24 hours a day.
Another way that we would monitor cows is through daily milk weight. So every day or every milking, our cows are milked 3 times a day. So every time she enters that parlor, we're seeing how much milk production that cow is giving us. And then we can create lists based on deviation from one milking to the other to identify cows. I actually come from I'm the sixth generation in my family, and I come from a long line of cow whisperers, as you will, which there's quite a few of us out there. So I've been watching cows since I was 4 years old, looking for key signs or ways that she can speak to me to tell me that she's not feeling well. So a lot of it was done eyesight, knowing your cows hands-on. And as we've grown and the industry has innovated, these new technologies have come online that allow us to make faster and more efficient decisions to keep cows healthy and to reduce the amount of time we have to spend trying to find those cows in the herd.
One concern people have is the avian flu that's hit a lot of livestock birds, a lot of wild birds, dairy cows elsewhere in the country, still no detection. Last I heard here in Wisconsin, is this something that could be an early warning sign if a cow in a herd were affected by something like avian flu?
Yes, I have friends in other states who have been affected by the bird flu, and they are so fortunate that they had use of technology, these activity monitoring systems, in order to identify onsets. And the biggest strength is, again, it's going to notify you of those cows. It's going to notify you of trend changes. And then you're able to be more preventative versus reactive. So they've been able to limit the amount of, it's just like the flu. Sometimes you'll get the sniffles, but we're trying to eliminate the amount of time spent under, like truly under the weather. So they've been able to catch it just at the sniffles before it's taken on a true flu form, and alleviate some of the stress and impact on the dairies, because it does have a huge economic impact to the dairy and the profitability and sustainability of those family farms.
We're talking to Jessica Trimner, herd manager at Milltrom Farms in Athens. We are talking about some of the latest farm dairy technology out there. Jessica, you mentioned six generations in your family in dairy. What does this new technology mean to you? How do you weigh the decision of, all right, what do we keep on doing the way we've been doing it for X number of years versus, hey, it's time to have this new innovation on board?
Yes, I think dairy farmers are constantly innovating to become more sustainable and more efficient, because we always want to minimize our waste and maximize our efficiencies. So when we're looking at new technologies to bring onto the farm, it's, you know, we're looking at cows first. We're trying to create a healthy and comfortable cow in her environment that allows her to speak to us so we can make better decisions. And then second for me is creating a sustainable workforce. You know, we work in a very physical environment. We're constantly walking. We're working with animals that are way or 10 times the weight than we are. And their calves are, you know, half our weight at times. So we're always trying to work smarter to protect our bodies, to protect our minds, and just make us more sustainable at our craft.
I think people sometimes think of farming as this kind of old-fashioned, low-tech thing. And I think, well, hey, wait a minute, we're in Wisconsin. We could talk for hours about all the like scientific innovations in dairy farming and fertilizer and more and things like that. Mm-hmm. Do you get that misconception sometimes that you're in, like, from people that you're in like this kind of low-tech, old-fashioned industry?
I definitely think at times, again, we host fourth grade tours at the farm and get a large audience that stop out just to hear about what we're doing, because it isn't normal. But the funnest tours to give are actually to the older generation of farmers who have retired or either discontinued farming or have passed the farm on, and they're just amazed, like could not dream that we would have this technology today to allow us to be better at our jobs, because we're blue-collar people. We're very humble and good at getting the job done. But we've been, you know, a lot of the practices we've been doing for hundreds of years. I think we're coming, you know, to a change in the generations, especially as we have more technology provided in front of us. And that's becoming kind of a myth.
Now, with things like robotic milking for cows, we hear in all sorts of lines of work concerns about finding enough labor, finding enough workers in various fields. Is that happening to you on the farm? Is that part of what's driving things like robotic milking?
It certainly is, and it's a change in labor. It doesn't take away the labor, so we need people that are more skilled in those areas to learn how to do repairs and to manage cows and what to look for and how to make sure that we're still being successful, we're still putting out a quality product, and we're still taking the best care of our cows. Technology, while every time we add it, we're always looking at how do we replace labor or how do we utilize people more efficiently on our dairy by providing them more skills to provide different opportunities to do more at our farm. So, but yes, when we initially put the robots in, we were working on trying to figure out how we were going to be sustainable with the next generation, with the unknowns of what labor looked like.
What kind of skills then are you looking for in a dairy farm worker these days?
We love people who love cows, obviously. People that are interested in learning and different ways of learning. I myself am not a computer savvy person, but one of my, at the time, coworkers who was excellent at reading cows is also excellent at reading robots and understanding how they work and how the parts are connected in order to make the robot function. So we want people who are driven to learn, and then looking at how do we learn and how can we provide educational practices to keep teaching them, to keep making them better in our business. But we're still looking for people who love cows, have a lot of integrity, and then just the willingness to learn and adapt.
Jessica, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yes, thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.
That was Jessica Trimner, herd manager at Milchrim Farms in Athens. It's the largest automated dairy farm in Wisconsin with more than 5,500 cows and heifers total. We talked to her about new technology on Wisconsin dairy farms, including smart collars that could be useful in detecting bird flu and other concerns in cattle. Now we turn to another innovation in the food and agriculture world coming soon to Wisconsin. Biotech firm Onego plans to open a 130,000-square-foot plant in Jefferson County that would produce egg protein using not chickens, but fungus and fermentation. It's expected to produce at the same rate as 6 million egg-laying hens a year. Onego Bio co-founder and Milwaukee native Christopher Landowski joins us now to talk about the new product, how it could impact the food industry. Chris, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Okay, well, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's good to be here.
Chris, first of all, tell us what you are making in this process. It's not eggs, it's a part, a key component that we use from eggs. What are we making here?
Yeah, we are making egg white from fermentation. And this is an egg white protein that you can use as a food ingredient to do all of the things that you would normally do with egg. Bake with it, make candy with it, make eggs. So everything that you would normally do with egg, we can do it with this bioalbumin product that we call it. It's an egg white protein.
Talk us through the process of fermenting ourselves into egg protein.
Yeah, so we grow, we have a microbe, a little microbe, then it grows in a bioreactor, and we feed it sugar, and it's happily growing inside of this bioreactor, secreting the egg protein outside into the liquid that it's growing in. And then we separate the biomass cells from the liquid, and we take that liquid and we process it and basically dry it down to a powder. And the powder is then the egg white powder that we would package up into a bag and send it off to the warehouse.
Our starting point is a fungus, as I understand it, which seemed kind of weird, but then I thought, well, hang on, there's a fungus called yeast that we make beer and bread out of, so it's not all that unusual in our food production system, right?
Absolutely, that's exactly spot on, and actually what we're doing is a little bit like brewing eggs, so everything is the same here. So the technology is, decades old. It's already used for so many other things that you have in life, from pharmaceuticals, medicines, to enzymes, to processing aids for other food manufacturing. This is just an extension of all that, what's been done before and now to make the food ingredients directly with fermentation.
Now, people might hear this and think, okay, that sounds cool, but we already get egg proteins from eggs. What is the problem? What's the need you're looking to fill with this process?
Yeah, what we're doing here is just trying to supplement the amount of egg in the supply chain. Because obviously in these days when there's avian flu or something happening to the chickens and they get sick, there's not enough egg available. So we're trying to buffer the supply of the egg that is needed for food manufacturing. So we're a business-to-business company, B2B, and so we're selling a product to other large food manufacturing companies. And of course, getting a constant supply of the food ingredient is very important, and also keeping that price from spiking up and down.
We're talking to Chris Landowski, co-founder of Onego Bio, talking about their process they're going to use to make an egg white protein here in Wisconsin. I want to talk about that here in Wisconsin. Part of the story, Chris, you're from Wisconsin. That didn't necessarily mean you're going to set this up here in the state. What led to that decision?
Wisconsin, as you know, they have a very strong history of food manufacturing. And that was actually very appealing because there was lots of skilled labor who know about manufacturing food and also let's say, lots of skilled and educated people coming from the universities, especially UW-Madison, for instance, who know about biotechnology. So it was sort of a great location that we found in Jefferson, Wisconsin, and they have set up a food and beverage innovation center where they have set up land plots for different food manufacturing companies. And we found a lot of very similar, like-minded companies such as Kikkoman. They make the soy sauce, for instance. They're also building in the same location. And so looking at all the parameters and then even thinking some business decisions, so actually the state of Wisconsin is very attractive also from the tax point of view. So they had a very good subsidies package or a very attractive plan for bringing businesses into that Jefferson site. And actually, of course, for me personally, it was a big success and that I would really love to be able to come back to Wisconsin and bring the technology with me to be able to produce this wonderful egg product back in my home state. So I thought it sort of completed the circle for me in terms of starting off in Madison, studying this topic of biotechnology, and now coming back to the state with a new business.
If you can give us some of the basics of the science here, what does it take to get this fungus to produce, consistently produce this egg protein?
Yeah, so the fungus is growing in a bioreactor, and you know it's growing in a very large vessel. It could be, let's say, 200,000 liters or so, and we're feeding it sugar. So we need a lot of corn sugar. That's another reason why we're in Wisconsin, is there's plenty of corn around. So we needed a supply of corn sugar, which we get there. So we feed it corn sugar. And the fungus is very happy about that. So it actually exchanges the corn sugar for the egg protein, and it makes that at a large scale. And we actually do monitor it inside of the bioreactor and look at the amount of sugar that we have to keep feeding it. So we actually monitor the health of the fungus and only feed it the amount of sugar that it needs. So we actually do a little bit starve the fungus. In a nice way so that it actually promotes more production of the product that we make, the egg white protein. So if you give the fungus too much sugar, it just doesn't produce very much product. So we actually keep it on the verge of starvation in order to promote good expression of the protein.
If all goes well, what would the timeline be to have this egg protein in production and in baked goods near us?
So the plan is to, at the end of 2026, we hope to be able to raise all the money we need for the factory. And the factory then, after 2026, it will take 2 years to build the factory. So at the, maybe around the end of 2028, we hope to start opening up the factory in Jefferson. And so maybe the early 2029 will be in full swing manufacturing to produce the product and selling it to customers. So I think in 2029 will definitely be the year that you all get to try it.
Chris, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Okay, well, thanks for having me. Yeah, nice to talk to you.
That was Christopher Landowski, co-founder and CEO of biotech firm Onego Bio. We talked about his company's plans to open its first plant in Jefferson County, where they'll make egg protein using fungi and fermentation. Earlier, we heard from Jessica Trimner, herd manager at Milchram Farms in Athens.